This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today, we're going to look at one aspect of personality that can tell you a lot about a person, and it relates to someone's pattern of giving. Some very exciting information to help you in your quest for understanding both of yourself and of the other person, so that you can get along better with yourself and with other people, because that's what I do here on The Positive Mind. I want to get you to have a better grasp on life by showing you how people work. So I'll start off this with a few questions. Do you find yourself always giving and not being given to in return? Are you one of those people who give, and don't get anything back coincidentally? Are you somebody who's likely to bring something as a gift to the office, but nobody brings a gift for you? Are you one of those folks? Do you find yourself resenting people who tend to be stingy? Or are you someone who has a friend who gives freely, and you find that you can't return the giving in kind, and somewhere you'd like to, but you can't seem to do it? Or are you someone who thinks he or she is entitled to gifts and expects them, especially from mates, as compensation for what you don't get from them, like commitment or babies or a house? Well, you better give me that bracelet because you didn't get me the house I wanted. If you're one of these folks, today's discussion is going to be very enlightening. Today we're going to look at generosity and stinginess. Both generosity and stinginess of the physical things in life, and generosity and stinginess of the heart. It happens over and over again. People give and give, and eventually resent it when people don't give back to them. So how does this happen? Why does this happen? That's the subject with today's program. Let's start with a premise. People who are generous with gifts are people with a general sense of abundance. People who are the opposite, people who are stingy, tightwads, or to use a less pejorative word, extremely frugal, they do not have a general sense of abundance. By abundance, I mean a sense that there's no limits as to what's around, no limits to possibilities. People with a sense of abundance are looser and easier counterparts. People with a sense of abundance are generous, generous with gifts, and usually generous with their hearts as well. Sometimes generous with their time. That means that there are some people who have a tendency to love faster than other people, trust faster than the average folk. And these same people tend to give gifts to others faster than most people do. And these very same people tend to be hurt more often, especially when they're not responded to in kind. And worst of all, generous people suffer deep, deep pain when they are betrayed. The generous person tends not to check store receipts, insurance policies, the bill that they get. The generous person is searching for a world of trust, a world of love. They hate doubting whether or not the shopkeeper added it up properly or didn't pay the bill. You don't want to. You want to live in a world that's beautiful. They're the easy marks for the thieves and the connivers, the hustlers and the abusers of the world. Look at the big tippers in a public place and you'll find them surrounded by smiling potential hustlers. You know, I see you. Oh, there's one over there. Look, he's giving out bills. And that is the way generous people like to live. They like to give. In fact, they have to give. We're going to talk more about that later. Then there's the other kind, the stingy people. The ones who rarely, if ever, give anything to anybody unless it's expected of them in some form or other. The people who think first of the price range before buying a gift. The ones who pass by the flower stands because flowers don't make much of a sense. To buy, that is. These very same people tend to hold their hearts in reserve. People who many call stingy of heart. They do not love freely. They're not sensitive or compassionate with others. They tend not to give gifts freely. They tend to be stingy in the pocketbook, calculating with the heart. They never reach for the check. They wait to see if they're going to have to split the check. This is whether they have money or not. I know many a wealthy person who is stingy about money in remarkably petty ways. In fact, recently I read a book called The Crazy Rich Asians. And in this book, they describe people who are of the billions, people from Asia who have billions of dollars. And they talked about how remarkably tight they are with their money, never tipping, never buying big gifts, never doing that kind of stuff. They don't do it. I would buy a bigger gift than somebody who had billions of dollars in general. And they talked about how in this book, there was one particular article where the woman was going to visit her fiancé, and her mother said, "You have to bring a gift." And she said, "What will I bring?" And she said, "Well, there's some liquor downstairs that somebody brought for a party. He brought a lot of Johnny Walker Red. Why don't you bring them a bottle of Johnny Walker Red?" And the daughter said, "Well, it's not an appropriate gift to bring a bottle of whiskey, you know, to the father of the person." He says, "Well, then go to the store and buy a compact. They have them on sale for $50. Maybe she'll like that." So it was still this same meager kind of stuff. Hold it tightly. Somebody came to see me and he kind of warned me. He said, "You know, at this level of wealth," and this is talking about people who have a lot of abundance, "they don't like to pay for everything. They like things to be given to them freely. They don't want to pay for anything. They feel like there's a point where they become the kind of nobility and royalty where they don't pay. So they become extremely stingy, and it's a remarkable thing. They can be successful financially because they're always calculating, but something about them always spells cheap. Even though they have the best personal possessions, the best homes, the best cars, the best clothes. But you spot it when you look at these things and you have to share with other people, like the food in the refrigerator, the types of wine they buy, unless it's a meal that is going to impress people in a certain way. So having money has little to do with whether a person is stingy or generous. Stingy or generous is in the heart. What kind are you? How would you put yourself in there, my friends? Are you a stingy person or a generous person? It does seem that the stingy ones wind up with more in their estates after they die. Probably because all that stress of saving kills them sooner anyway, so their spending is limited by a shorter life as well. It takes effort to be stingy. It takes less effort to be generous. You know, you just kind of pass it around. Something comes to you, and somebody offers you a bag of chips, and you pass the chips on to everybody around you. See, stingy people do not have a sense of abundance. They believe that all the resources are limited. They tend to be afraid of mortality. They tend not to be spiritual in the true sense of the word. Although I've met an awful many New Age professionals who are stingy beyond belief, stingy with their own God-given talents. You know why? It's because of that missing sense of abundance I mentioned earlier. If you do not have a sense of abundance, then you have a sense of limitedness, limits that pervade your life. If you see things as limited, then clearly you're aware of your own physical mortality, and therefore you fear death. Not just accept death, but fear it day to day. So you hold on to everything, and you hold on, and you hold on. That's why physicians tend to be so stingy, because they fear death, not yours, but their own. That's a whole other discussion which we're going to have to go into. So stingy people do not spend money on one thing above all else, their health. Oh, no, they do spend money on their health. That's one place they do spend a lot of money. They can become fanatical about longevity because that's all they really have, themselves, their own physical lives. You'll run into them in the running path. They're perfect, but they never offer you a drink. Stingy people are frequently hypochondriacal. Now, of course, these are at the extremes, and there are levels of stinginess and generosity. Look at the professors the professions that attract stingy people. It's all the professions that are always risking your money. Most lawyers, although I've met some real exceptions, kind, generous with their time, give effective people who go out of their way, off the clock to help people. But most lawyers, you know what they're down to nowadays? 10-minute segments. 10-minute segments. I charge you by the 10 minutes. Now that means, now get this one, there's a bill I saw and somebody showed it to me. In my effort to dial you, the line was busy and that took me 6 minutes to get through to you, and I bill you for the 6 minutes because your line was busy. I saw this busy phone call, charge, time trying to contact client. Whew. Got it down to the minutes, huh? Wow. Accountants. Everything is about calculating every penny. With the exceptions of Dave Carson's, of course, who's this wonderful spirit who I've seen who has gone way outside of himself to be helpful to just about everybody. Physicians, who used to be by definition healers first, struggling business persons next, then became businessmen first, drug pushers next, and healers last. A good test for a doctor's office, fresh flowers in the waiting room, even a handful, it's a good sign. It's a good sign. This guy's a little generous. So it seems clear there's a very clear division you can make between the generous and the stingy. And this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, talking about the difference between generosity and stinginess. Interesting, too, that women tend to be so much more generous than men. Men give to the woman in calculated exchanges. Men rarely are generous with other men. But women with women tend to flow much easier, and men are always easier with women when they seem to be getting their rewards. That seems pretty primal. You know, I know if I give you gifts, then you're going to give me back a gift. You know, if I want to have sex with you, then I have to give you something. And that's kind of very primitive nature. But am I going to give you something otherwise? There seems to be something much more flowing in the female spirit. And that's not surprising. They do give birth, which men don't. Their bodies are designed to be shared by babies. And then again, if you heard any of the programs I did on male and female sexuality, men are very generous with one thing that was designed into their bodies by Mother Nature. Men tend to be generous with their sperm because there they have a sense of abundance. There they can, now you give it away, it comes back. But in general, little else, except when compared to women, especially when compared to women. By nature's design, women also share their bodies sexually. The man who enters the woman's body, she receives him into her, not the other way around. Now, of course, this is a simplification, and it only suggests that there may be other forces at play like biology and nature. So the answer seems to be clear, isn't it? Generous is good, stingy is bad, but that's not good enough. Sorry, there's many sides to every story, and that's where I take you next. And just to remind you, this is The Positive Mind you're listening to on WBAI 99.5 FM. We're talking about the difference between generous people and stingy people and how it affects you and your love life, which, by the way, includes your friends and your family. Love life does not mean only who you sleep with. Love life means who you share love with. I know many people who sleep together who are not in each other's love life at all, don't you? But to stick to the theme, we'll talk about what happens to stingy and generous people, and it'll give us a much better understanding of why the answer is not so simple. Because the generous ones and the stingy ones, which one are you? Now, it sounds easy, doesn't it? Stingy people are wrong, generous people are right. Let's think about it. At first, let's address the generous people. Did you ever notice that it's harder not to give than to give if you're a generous person? If you're a generous person, I know a person, a guy who likes to give gifts. So he gives gifts all the time, and he gives gifts, and he met one woman who said to him, you know, a lot of the stuff you give me, I don't really want. I don't want gifts. I don't want these possessions. I don't want these things you give me, but I take them because I understand your need to give them. Now, he thinks by giving these gifts, they're going to love it so much, they're going to really adore him because they're going to be grateful, but they never show much gratitude, just a nice thank you. But from her end, what she's doing is she's taking your gift by giving you something to give. It's like somebody who makes you food. Well, now, could giving be an act of aggression meant to humiliate you into feeling guilty? That's an interesting thing. I am so generous to you, I give you things. You better be grateful. See, now you can't run away. Now you can't get angry at me. Now you can't, because I'm generous. So generous could be an act of hostility. Ooh. Ooh. Well, then could stinginess be an act of love? Very interesting. Ask a Buddhist. Right? A Buddhist would say stinginess is not stinginess. You just don't give. Because it's an act of love. If you're a generous person, you need to give. You live by giving. Your life is about taking that energy that passes through you, that finds wonderful things everywhere you know would please. You love to pass it all around. You see something in a store, you have to get it because you're going to pass it around. You have a book that you read, you love it, you can't wait to give it to someone else. If you don't give, you don't get as much pleasure. Here's one for all you aunts and uncles, grandmothers and grandfathers. How about the joy it brings you when there's a baby around or a young child for whom you're constantly finding toys, clothes, and gifts to give? I can't tell you how many parents I have seen turn around to their parents, the grandparents of the children, and say, please stop buying things to bring in this house. Please stop getting outfits. Please stop getting toys. There's no room here. But the parent needs to do it, and they don't want, your child doesn't want to tell you, the grandparent, to stop doing it because you get so much joy giving it. Babies and children are great because they give you an unlimited chance to spend your money and time giving, because you need to give. I often wonder that's the beauty of being a grandmother. Oh, I'm a grandmother of 9. I have 9 places that I now can give. And that's the primary beauty of it, because you need to give. Not because they need to receive. So our first question is not just about generosity, but about compulsive generosity. You get swept up in this giving so much that by comparison, everybody falls short. You're the kind of person who is impatient as people decide to divvy up the check in a restaurant. You have to grab it and pay for it. You say, I'll tell you, because you get angry at them for trying to split it up. Because you're a compulsive giver. Because that flow of giving may not be interrupted, you don't want to be part of the figuring out the pennies. Lay back sometime. Let them figure it out. That's why compulsive givers can't simply say, I don't get back in any way what I give, so I'll simply give a little less. It's so unnatural it hurts. They'd rather give up the friend than give up the flow. Also, to take it one step further, compulsive givers always have a hidden agenda. They're always waiting to be given back, and it's inevitable. Givers resent not receiving back, and when they don't get back enough, they can become rageous. Rageous. They could get so angry, they become furious. It's like you have this wonderful, nice parent who's so kind and nice, and then all of a sudden, they blow their tops. Why? Because all this time they were waiting to get back, and eventually you just crossed over. And when you crossed over, everything exploded. Which means that the gifts were not really true gifts after all, were they? The gifts were a need to give with a strong, very strong need to be given back. And of course, it always happens. A compulsive giver finds a stingy person to lavish things on and then resents the fact that they don't give back. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been that way? Do you ever have a friend like that, where you're the giver and they're the one receiving? So what else can you do? If you see yourself in this endless cycle of getting angry at people who don't give back as much as you do, well, let's try an experiment. Compulsive givers go on a diet. Give yourself a period of time, like a month. Get this experiment for an entire month. Give nothing to anyone and see what happens to you. Take a one-month period and don't make or buy a gift that's not expected of you. See what happens. Do not automatically pick up the check if you're in a crowd. And if it comes to you, try asking, I've got the check, what shall we do with it? To compulsive givers, this is excruciating. See what happens if you give less. Not only what happens to your relationship to the people on whom you lavish gifts, but what happens to you. The other people probably won't even notice, but you sure will. And watch to see if you become more insecure in your relationship with people. Some of you will find that you begin to get depressed. You may actually get depressed if you're not giving. Well, if you do, that's very interesting. And here's a refinement here that'll teach you even more. During that period of time, find someone to give you a series of gifts, or bring a series of gifts to a place that would be anonymous, like bringing flowers to a homeless shelter, or properly packaged foods. Just drop it off, no name tag. This'll teach you even more. Does giving have no meaning if the person is not there to thank you? So have somebody bring it over for you. But if you want to keep it simple, just stop giving for a month, no exceptions, including the children in your life. Imagine going to visit your grandchildren and bringing nothing. The children are going to look at you. If you're one of those givers, one of those grandparents who are always giving, the kids are going to look at you like they don't know who you are. Imagine having a relationship with children who love you for just who you are. If you wind up being one of those relatives who bring gifts for the children every time you visit, what kind of relationship are you creating with them, especially if the gifts you give are things that the children's parents can't afford to get the child? Parents begin to resent you getting gifts and lavishing gifts on children that they can't afford. They won't say it because they can't imagine denying the child, but I see the looks on the parents' faces when someone provides their children with stuff they can't or don't want to provide. And the children see you not as much as a nice person for who you are, but they see you as the gift giver. Maybe you'll have to explain to them if you don't bring a gift because they'll be expecting one. Maybe you'll see them disappointed or angry and might have to say, I see they expected me to bring something like I always do, but I'm sorry to disappoint you. Don't say any more than that. No promises for the future and see what happens. There are many ways to love a child, not just the gifts. Try asking them about one of their toys. Ask for details. Show some excitement. So as you can see, I'm saying that giving can be a tainted thing, and generosity is not always as great as it looks. Now let's take a little time on stinginess. It's the other side of the coin if you're stingy and probably don't even know it. Stingy people really recognize the fault of their ways. Eventually, they get it as feedback from friends who know them, but they don't pay attention to it. Husbands or wives who are ringing a bell, setting up an alarm, saying that they are losing their love for you. Stingy people tend to get left by other people. They don't know why, but the other person just kind of disappears. It's not just the gift giving that makes a difference. It's the heart giving that goes behind the gift giving that makes the felt difference. It's tough. Because as I said before, stingy people do not have a sense of abundance. Stingy people are holding on to everything for dear life. As I said before, stingy people have a strong sense of their own mortality and an unusual fear of death. So for them, changing is much bigger than it is for the compulsively generous person. They have to fight the endless weighing of facts. They don't have a sense of spontaneity. They tend to calculate. So what are they going to do? Can they pretend to be generous? Can they just go out and buy gifts? It's not that easy. And the problem is, no matter what I suggest, it gets weighed down in consideration of returns. So here's a way to start. This is to the stingy people out there who would like to become different. Try tithing. Tithing is a good word. Anonymously. Take a month and give something every week to someone to whom you would be anonymous. I could think of a place or two called Buddy that you might be able to do that. Tithing is good. Get some flowers or package food to a homeless or children's shelter anonymously. Give cash instead of checks to your churches, if you have any. Donate money to things you believe in, like this station, like a political party, but do it anonymously. Send money orders instead of cash if you must. Drop a quarter on the street for someone to find. Hand something to someone without being there for the gratitude. Since you like to calculate things, take 1% of all the money you bring in this week, just 1%. 1%. So let's say this week you're in $100. That's $1. And give it away. 1%. And if you don't have any, you know the 1% is not going to make a difference. Give 1% of whatever you have away. Take some time and give it to the city. Clean stuff in the streets. Pick up a piece of trash that you see laying around and put it in the garbage can as if you're saying hello to the city itself. Make everything a little neater wherever you go. Pick up something and put it in the tray. It'll teach you a lot about yourself. Remember, the reason you're even looking at this today is because we're looking to make your hearts and your love better. We're looking to give to each other to make connections that are real, not based on gifts. So both generosity and stinginess can come from negative spaces. But in the end, if you get to feel the abundance of the love that's available, if you get to feel the abundance of the flow of the cosmic universe, attitudes towards giving materially tell you a lot about giving in your heart.
You are listening to The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
One day, people will touch and talk, perhaps easily, and loving will be as natural as breathing and as warm as sunlight. And people will untie themselves like a string is unknotted. They'll unfold and they'll yawn and they'll stretch and they'll spread their fingers. They'll unfurl like seaweed returning to the sea. And work will be simple and swift, like a seagull flying. And play will be casual and quiet, as that same seagull is settling. And the clocks will stop, and no one will wonder or care or even notice. One day, people will smile without reason, even in the winter, even in the rain. We're going to take a short break, play you a little music, and when we come back, we'll continue.
Thank you.
This is Armand DeMille back with you with A Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Let's shift our attention to a different subject. Talking about some of those terrible arguments that people get into, and I'm here with my co-worker, Audrey Clark. Audrey, welcome to BAI. Okay, listen, Audrey, this terrific discussion we were having, I thought, should be recorded. Here's the way I see it. Everybody, we started this conversation with people look at relationships. And you have a relationship with somebody, you have a relationship that's beautiful, it's fine, it's loving, it's kind, it's endearing. It's so special, right? We have these great relationships. And you find the lover of your choice. You find that this person is great to be with. Except every now and then, the person gets weird. They get wacky. They get odd. So if you think about the average good relationship, you're with somebody, 90% of the time they're terrific. 10% of the time they're weird. Now, weird means they're odd, they're strange, they're angry, they're bitter, they're miserable. At the 90-10, you say to yourself the following. If you're dating them for the first time, you say, oh, I'm going out with her. She's terrific 90% of the time. But when she gets crazy, she gets so crazy that the entire thing is damaged. I cannot even imagine spending my life with her. That's the beginning, right? When you first go out with somebody. Then, after a while, you say to yourself, but there are so many benefits to this person, and you notice that the 10% that they get wacky, angry, bitter, whatever it is, weird, it passes. And so you say, well, okay, that just passed. It wasn't that important. And so the 90-10 works, and you say to yourself, I could be with this person. Now, what happens over time is that 10% gets bigger and bigger, and we want to know, how does the idiosyncrasy of a mate turn into such a big deal that we now feel that we have to separate or get away from them? And that's what we're going to be looking at today, because we've seen stuff about it that's very important. So it starts off with you have to ask yourself a question, and it's a question that Audrey asked herself and I asked myself. What is the weird part of me? What is the part of me that suddenly gets strange in any relationship, whether it be with a friend, with a lover, with a mate, with a child? What part of me gets strange? What part of you who are listening gets strange? Strange meaning not so nice to be with. And here's where Audrey became really great, because Audrey looks at herself well. Audrey, let's talk about it. Let's talk about what you said about yourself, which I thought was terrific. So the question is, when you and I were talking downstairs, I asked you, I said, Audrey, what's the strange part about you? And what do you know about yourself?
Sometimes I get weird. Sometimes I just want to be alone. And I am married for over 7 years now. And sometimes my husband, he be like asking me questions and I just want to be alone. And he probably think it's something weird. But sometimes you just want to be alone. And then it started to escalate into an argument. And then after that argument, we try to like get things on the right track.
Good. Okay. Yes. So it's perfect. Here's what you're saying. You're saying, okay, the two of you, you get some moment in your life. For whatever reason, for all we know, it's biochemical, hormonal, could be any reason. You said, I need some time alone. And then your husband is there, and he's kind of talking to you. And you don't want to talk to him right now because you want to be alone. Now, this is when you get weird. Now, not you. It's not just Audrey, because you're one of the least weird people I know in the world. But what you'll do is you'll start talking about something that will lead to an argument.
Yes, because I want to be left alone.
So the way you pick on an argument is you'll talk to him about he hangs out with his friends too much.
Yes.
Right? He doesn't take care of the baby enough.
Or you party too much.
You party too much, and right?
And that will start a fight. Just to be alone. I just want to be left alone. And then it will escalate into a big argument. And then a couple of times you sit back and I said to myself, wow, he is good. But then I just want to be left alone. And why is that?
Yeah, good. So now be left alone is as if it's his fault that he's bothering you. But you want to be alone.
Yes.
You want to disengage. For a little while, Audrey, who is this great person a lot of the time, has a need to disengage. She needs to shut off her mind, shut off her body, just go on her own.
Yes.
So we say left alone as if it's really up to the other person, but it's really not. You want to be with yourself.
Yes.
And then you got this husband there and a baby there, and you got all these issues there, and here he is. And it's almost like you're like you want to bark at him, get out of here, you know. And the way you say get out of here is you start a fight, you and your friends. Then he picks up on the argument, and he says, what about my friends? And you say, your friends are no good, bad, da, booba. And he says, but you never liked my friend. And then the argument goes back and forth and back and forth.
Yes.
And then somewhere inside you, what you're telling me, is you say, you know, what am I doing? He's a good guy.
Yes.
And you calm down.
Yes.
Now, that's fine. Now you calm down, but the words are still in the air. So now he's got these words in his air, and as soon as he wants to be alone and separate, he can bring up the argument again.
Yes. He will, like, say, remember you told me that?
Right. So now we got him picking up on the argument.
Yes.
Remember you told me that, and remember, and now you're already done with it. You're already done. It's like we need an eraser. We need an eraser to come back and eliminate all the things we said. You know, we said, well, forget those words I said to you. They didn't really count. They didn't matter. No, 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 no. Now, the next time he needs to separate, he then brings up this issue. Then he brings up this issue. If you're in a really good mood, you say to him, oh, honey, forget about that.
Yeah.
You feel a little fuzzy. Come on over here. Let me just stroke your head. That's what you'll say if you're in a good mood.
Yes.
But if you're on the edge,
then you'll start again.
Start all over again, and we'll
fight
about this. I know a couple who started with this. The woman happened to have a hormonal imbalance, and her husband, who had been away for a long period of time, came to be with her just because he was going to be with her 2 weeks, and then he had to leave and go back on business. So he comes and he leaves with her, and he's with her for 1 week. During that week, she's in one of her worst hormonal moods you can imagine. She was just sunk through the floor, suicidal. So when he comes in, she's in this place. He doesn't know what the place is, so she says, it's all about the fact that you're not here. So he explains why he's not there, and then she says, it's because you are doing this. And then she shows jealousy, and the argument escalates and escalates and escalates, and they spend the worst week two humans could possibly spend together, fighting and despair and misery and everything you could imagine, to the point where they decided to sell the house.
Wow.
So they put the house on the market that week. Then he leaves. He flies off to where he had to leave. And her hormonal crisis passed, right? She was PMS, and suddenly everything was okay.
Everything was fine, yes.
She loved the house. But he went off, and in his mind, he's talking to his therapist in the other city, saying to her, my wife wants to divorce me, and so on and so forth. So he's carrying it. Now, the trouble with us in these arguments and what we're talking about is that we carry the content of the words.
With us.
If we had a way to blip it out, an eraser, right? Wouldn't it be great?
Yes.
Forget all. Take that away.
Stop.
I never said that. Right? I never said, forget everything that was said up until now. Erase.
Yes.
Like you could do it on a recording. Erase that. That's no good. But we don't. We keep it in there because when we get nervous, the next time, if I say it to you and I complain, next time you get nervous, you come back with me with those words.
Yes, with the same words.
Remember what you said.
Yes.
Now, this sounds so typical that eventually what happens is relationships that may start off as 90-10 become 70-30. Now it's at 70-30, and you're looking at it, and your marriage doesn't look so good. You say to yourself, I'm not happy here. You don't remember, I'm not happy here 30% of the time. You just remember in the 30% of the time, when you're in your misery, it feels like the whole thing. From a distance, I, as a therapist, look at people who come in and I see 70-30. I say, well, that's the way it is. I'd like to make it 80-20 or 90-10 if we could.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be that piece there, but you can't believe the words. So what do you do to balance yourself when you see yourself in that, when you could finally get that objective look at this 70-30 that you're going through with your mate?
Yeah, then I sit down and I say to myself, well, life is too short. I need to enjoy my life. Why fuss and fight and argue? We have kids. And you said to yourself, you know what? I can be happy if I want to be happy.
Well, that's a big deal. That's a big deal, yes. Audrey. You know, I don't know how many people have that access. I can be happy if I want to be happy. Now, what does being happy mean? Being happy means letting go of the content of the words that have no meaning anyway. Being happy is not believing the garbage, not believing all of this stuff. Being happy means that when you're in a relationship with somebody, remember they're your friend. And being unhappy is forgetting that they're your friend.
Forgetting.
So maybe we need a couple of signs on the wall. So when we hear these arguments, and when you see when you're living in a life of this tremendously painful, difficult life where it's so painful and it hurts so much and you're with somebody and you wonder why you're married and why you're there, you're usually locked in. And that's when you're locked into this percentage. You're locked into the bad spot. What we're learning about today is that sometimes words spoken at those bad moments stay in reserve. Now, do the words count? So a woman says to a man the other day, I remember he told me about this. She says, if I meet a man for the first time, and he says to me, because she's an attractive woman, if you're so committed to this other relationship, why aren't you wearing a ring? That's what they say to me. Why aren't I wearing a ring? So now she is leading this out to her boyfriend, saying, why am I not wearing a ring? But it was one of her strange moments. Her boyfriend should have, at that moment, knowing her, said to himself, uh-oh, this sounds strange.
This is one of those moments?
Yeah, if he had recognized it. But instead he said, oh, really? Now he's caught. First of all, she's already talking to men, and he's already feeling some feelings about that. And number two, now he's talking about a ring, and this means she's talking about marriage. So he says to her, look, you really think you would be better off with a ring? Now they're talking about the ring. And he says, what kind of ring? Now they're talking about rings.
Yeah.
Really what they're talking about is something else completely. She's feeling odd.
Yes.
And he says, well, maybe we should get a yellow stone on it instead of a white stone, because yellow stones are pretty. And then they're thinking about jewels. Now, what is this discussion becoming? The whole time, she's getting a little more upset and a little more upset. And
he
realizes,
more angry.
No matter what he's saying, it doesn't matter. The intention here the entire time was weirdness.
Yeah.
See, the intention was right from the beginning, something is going wrong now. You know what happened was really interesting? After a while, this turned into a kind of sour note between the two of them, and they're a very lovely couple. And it turned into a sour note, so now the ring is up in the air, and now they're talking about whether they should live together or not live together. And he asked her a question. He said, I noticed you didn't take your thyroid medication. And she said, no, I forgot it. So they had gone away on a trip together, and she forgot her thyroid medication, and they were on the third day where she hadn't taken her thyroid medication. And that, all of a sudden, he said, well, why didn't you bring it with you? Or why did you forget it? She said, I just sometimes forget it. Now, the thyroid medication is mandating. It's now talking about her mood. 3 days of not taking thyroid medication, you sink through the floor.
Yeah.
So she was now sinking through the floor, and the way she was picking up from sinking through the floor was by starting this argument about let me talk about a ring.
You find something to talk about.
You find something to talk about. Let's talk about your family. Let's talk about something. So then but now he has a real issue. His real issue is, well, wait a minute. If you care about us, why don't you pack the thyroid medication? And now he's angry about the fact that she's forgotten it more than once. Now he wants to get a prescription for himself. And now the thyroid medication becomes the next issue. And
the next issue, yeah.
So the next time that he's loving her, and he gets weird. You know what he says to himself? I love her, but remember, she forgets her thyroid medication. And if she can do that, then I can't trust her. So this way he can hold himself back. Aren't we humans weird? You know, we should all have our brains scraped out so we can't think in such complex terms. We are so stupid at times, and we believe the very words we're thinking. Now you take the very same thoughts and you go to a therapist. So do you carry around a lot of these issues? Well, wait, let me ask you this. You're such a sensible person, Audrey. I mean, I've gotten to the point where I have such a nice respect for you in your mind. But your friends aren't as smart as you are they? Or do they get locked into things?
Yes, they sometimes.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about classic relationship discussions. Now, I would talk to you about it clinically, except I got one of my best clinical sources, the people who live it, and Audrey Clark is one of those people who are really clear about herself and the way she is, and it's I really appreciate it. So this is the beginning of an exploration of human relationships. The answer I have about it is none. I don't have an answer. I mean, for as long as you want to keep a distance from people, save up your food, save up your stamps. They used to call these food stamps. That's what they used to call them. There are things that people say, and you save them like little food stamps in a drawer, if any of you know what a food stamp is. And you take this and you put it in your drawer and you hold on to it until you need it. Then as soon as you need an argument, you pull out an issue. Let's talk about when you said this, and let's talk about this, or this house is dirty, or you never clean up. You just have these things you could always pull up.
You look for something.
Yeah, and you have something. You have it in the back of your mind. If there were a thing, Audrey, if there were a thing you were never allowed, if you knew you have a weapon against your husband, for example, right? Complain about his friends, right? Complain about his partying.
Yes.
Right? Complain about...
His drinking.
Okay. Complain about... give me another. His relationship with his mother. Okay, you don't complain about that, do you?
No.
But you know about that one,
yes.
Right? It burns
yes.
you somewhere
yes.
on the inside,
yes.
in your mind, right? Okay, good. So you got these three things. If we were to say to you, and what does he have about you? That you're too tough? What are the three things he would complain about you?
Oh, you always nag.
You nag. You're a nag, right? You're a nag, right? What else? That's it? Just you're always reminding him, what about your daughter? Didn't you get the food? Didn't you pick this up? Didn't you, right? Does he have any other issues about you? Well, let's say he's got his own and you've got your own. If we were to forbid ourselves to mention these things, I'm just trying to think about this. Like, I have a good friend of mine who works with me who's very forgetful. If I'm never allowed to remind her that she is forgetful, it would be a very interesting thing because I remind her how forgetful she is a lot. Oh, you forgot that. Oh, you forgot that. I should go on a diet of not reminding. If you would never mention his friends again, what would happen?
I think it would be okay.
It would be okay, right?
Yes.
If you could say to yourself, I'll never mention his friends again.
Yes, but sometimes you say, I'm not going to bring this up. But then, I don't know. It just started just like that.
Right. It comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because the bug is in you.
Yes.
It doesn't just start from somewhere else.
No.
The bug has got to be in us.
It's right in there, just waiting to come out.
So we should make a list of the primary complaints that we have about each other, right? And then say to ourselves, this is our list that we're going to bring out. These are our weapons. These are our rockets. These are our bombs. These are our bullets. So if I want to have a fight with you, I'm going to complain about the way you look. I'm going to complain about your money. I can bring up certain issues. Everybody should make a list of the weapons that they could potentially use against their mates. And once you make the list, you have it there. Use it when you need it, but use it consciously. What bullets shall we pull out today? All right, let me go after your mother. You know, let me go after your brother. Let me go after your past relationships. Let me go after your friends. And if you made a list, I would like everybody to make a list and send me this list. I want you to give me a list of things that you could use to start an argument with your mate. And things that if you're feeling bad about yourself, you might pull up to just have an argument with your mate. And this brings up a big question. When you're feeling bad, why do you want an argument with your mate? It's just going to make you feel worse.
Sometimes you think that it will make you feel better.
Well, you know, sometimes it may make you feel better. If you think about it, when you're feeling like you're really sinking, you're wondering, I'm sinking. It's always good to know something you're fighting. So if you have a fight, if you get angry at something, it makes you not sink as bad.
Yeah, you want the other party to feel bad.
Right, and so by arguing and fighting, you feel stronger than if you don't.
Yes.
So maybe it does make you feel better. So we should all have weapons of heart destruction. You know, we all should have. You should have these weapons. You should use it against each other. Instead of trying to curtail them, just pull them out when you need them. Fight with each other. Accuse them. Find their triggers. Find the right buttons to push. Know how you can trigger them off easily. Become a master at it. You know, you can say words that just give you mastery. And once you get the mastery over it, you can become the kind of person who could, at will, destroy a relationship for a few moments. But then, maybe, have some kind of an agreement about an eraser. You know? Have
yes.
some, and none of that count. Did that count? That didn't count, but I'll bring it up the next time. You see? But the next time, I'll remember that you used it.
Yes.
And I'll use the bullet against you, which is that fact that you use bullets against
yeah.
me. What a crazy life we lead. But this is normal human relationships. And this is Armand DeMille with Audrey Clark talking to you about the phenomenon of human communication. It is an evolutionary conundrum.
When an irresistible force such as you meets an old immovable object like me, you can bet as sure as you live, something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta give.
If you wanted to hear today's program again, you could go to WBAI.org or you can go to thepositivemind.com and you could send an email also to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'd love to hear from you and hear your reactions. Be back with you soon, my friends.